from Prasad. That's the way to do it. Just hammered for four. He comes right back and uproots his off stump.
Hey everyone, we're back with another episode of Uprooted Stumps podcast. I think it's been 1.5 years, almost 2 years, probably since the last episode. And I'm Arjun, and in all this time, we've lost my co-host Gopal. Guru Gopal has had a lot of personal commitments that he's been busy with, and so he's not been able to do the podcast anymore. But I've somehow managed to find another alternate to Guru Gopal. He's someone who's also from the same school, IIM Ahmedabad, as Guru Gopal used to be. This is the new co-host for the Uprooted Stumps podcast is Sadhu Sumit. So welcome, Sumit, to your new podcast.
Thank you, Arjun.
And Sumit and I, today we're going to talk about the Cricket World Cup that just ended. We are recording here on the night just off the end of the World Cup. So India just lost a few hours ago. Sumit and I had watched it together, but now we're recording this. So before we start, I just want to maybe just summarize the way I'm thinking right now, because we're all disappointed as Indian fans, but maybe what my thought process is right now, and my message for all of our fans is, firstly, that we have to be very proud of this Indian team. We have to be happy that we are in a position we can support such a strong team that has given us so much joy over the past weeks. We can be disappointed. It is okay. It is normal. I am very disappointed. And we should all take a few days right now to let this sink in. To some degree, this will hurt a lot more for many, many, many years. But that's the way sports is. It's cruel. And I remember Jimmy Neesham had tweeted after he lost the 2019 World Cup final, which is obviously much closer than this final here, said playing sports is just not worth the pain. You might as well take up baking instead and die fat and happy. Which is true. It's true right now. Right now, we're all sad. We're sad for ourselves, but we're also sad for the players that we have watched over the past 12 years, particularly Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma. But we need to know that they will be sadder than us. This is their life. For us, it's entertainment, but this is what they have been toiling for years and years, mentally and physically. And probably this was the last chance for these two, and maybe even others like Jadeja and Shami. And so even though we are disappointed, we have to be happy, because our team was the best team, arguably, in the World Cup. It was not the best team on the day, and it is that one day that matters. But until the day before, everyone said this team is unbeatable. There are no weak links. The team was so dominant that it gave rise to conspiracy theories from all over the world. Captain tossed the coin too far away, the pitch was changed midway, umpires are playing for IPL contracts, and all these kinds of theories and noise really comes into play after one team is doing what seems impossible to be true, and that's what India had been doing. India had three batsmen who scored over 500 runs, including the highest run scorer of the tournament, the highest wicket taker of the tournament, and ended up with the most wins in this tournament, including beating this Australian team once. So we are fans today of what I think is the best Indian one-day international team ever in at least the 30 years that I've been watching cricket. And this team will only get better and better in the coming years. So let's keep supporting them and give these players and coaches love and not hate, because that is what they have given us. So you'll win some, and you lose one. Sumit, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel a lot of heartache after watching India lose. But I need to accept that they were the best team in the tournament. Even they didn't perform on the day that mattered. We lost to the team who played well today, the day when it mattered most. But still, but one thing I would like to say, when I started watching cricket, following cricket from 90s and the entire 2000, when Australia, they were a big force. Whenever we used to have a match against Australia, the first thought that we might lose and we need to play really, really good. And even when they used to win, it was like a very normal win for them. But today, when I saw Labuschagne crying after winning the World Cup and the joy what they had after beating India. There was a small bit of satisfaction that a team like Australia now, the way they are reacting after winning, like they were not even expecting it. Heartache, but really happy with the entire tournament performance.
Yeah. So let's do this. Today, what we'll do is we'll talk about each team one by one. So we'll start with India. We'll spend a bit of time on India, and then we'll go on to the other teams, Australia, New Zealand, etc. For me, I think the most important thing that I found very different and unique and happy actually was the way Rohit Sharma changed the template a little bit. He was a lot more attacking than usually he had been. And I think that paid dividends. Rohit ended up being one of the top run scorers, but also at an incredible strike rate, which really provided that impetus to the Indian team at the start. What else did you feel was different or was good about the way India performed in this tournament?
I think Rohit, if I'm not wrong, he scored 597 runs in the tournament, which is second highest in this edition, behind Virat. Virat, he made, I think, 767 and he had 597. But if I talk in terms of impact, if it is not more, it's not less than Virat's impact overall. The way he has played, the starts he has given in all kind of pitches. He has played a lot of selfless cricket this tournament. He was a quite different player till I think 2018-19 or till when he took up the captaincy. After that, when he told that he's going to take this lead of the selfless cricket, taking the attack to the opposition, giving the entire team a solid start, he has proved almost in the entire tournament the way he has played. I think this India need to continue with this template with or without Rohit in the future. I don't know whether Rohit, he will continue to play ODI in the near future, but India needs to continue with such template what he has laid as a captain.
What do you think about India's bowling?
India's bowling, it was pretty good. I don't know whether Hardik's injury was a blessing in disguise, or because if he would have not been injured, I don't think that Shami would have come in the bowling plan. They would have rotated this Shardul or Ashwin, maybe, if Hardik was there. I think Shami had the average of 12 with a strike rate of 7 to 8 balls. I think it's unbelievable how he has. I was surprised when he was not in the starting 11 during the initial matches. Him with Bumrah, I think Siraj was a bit weak link, but the other four bowlers, they have bowled brilliantly.
Yeah, I agree. Even when you say Siraj as a weak link, that weak link was still quite strong. He had one or two really, really good games, and he had a good tournament otherwise.
Yeah. When I say weak link, it means as compared to the other fours, we can't have like all five, they are going all gun blazing. Even if you see all the teams, the big names, they had like weaker links. Stark, apart from the finals, he had a very mediocre tournament. Even Trent Bolt and everybody, they had a mediocre tournament. So as compared to them, maybe at par with good bowlers, but as compared to what the benchmark Shami has given and these Bumrah has given, that's why he has looked a bit mediocre, or we can say a weak link, just because the way Bumrah and Shami has bowled.
The other thing that India has, I think, benefited from a lot is by going after really solid batsmen. And I think for the first time in many, many years, probably after the era of Yuvraj Singh and MS Dhoni, have India had such a strong number 4 and 5 who have been performing in Shreyas Iyer and in KL Rahul. And initially, we were wondering if that will actually slow down the team, if the top five batsmen are all quite similar in some way, that they prize their wicket perhaps a bit too much and there's no X factor in there, particularly before Suryakumar Yadav came into the team. But now looking back, you can sense that actually that was a template that worked. These five batsmen, I think all of them averaged above 50 before the final, and they've all come in and they've performed at times when required, and they've all made big 50s and a couple of centuries. So I think that's something that if that formula continues, then India will be looking at some really big scores in one day internationals in the coming years.
Though I think it's very, I don't know, it's very difficult to compare the teams between different eras. But I feel even till 2012, 2013, we had pretty decent, solid number four, number five, like Raina, Yuvraj coming and then Dhoni coming in there. India has always lacked something being a perfect 11. I think at that time when we had these, the opening, Sachin and Sehwag or Gambhir, top order was solid, middle order was solid, but we lacked the pace batteries. Maybe we had Zahir Khan, one which we can say that he was bowling good, or maybe one spinner, but I think we were lacking in bit of we didn't have the three pacers. This time we had good pace trio with spinners, good batting, good bowling, but maybe we were lacking somebody bowling from the top five, top six, giving some, like being a golden arm of the team, breaking some partnership. I think still in that era, in those the teams in the 2000 or the early 2010s, I think there were some positives, but there were some negatives. But same is happening with the Indian, with the current Indian team. What do you feel, Arjun? I feel that still we had this weakness. It was our Achilles heel that we didn't have the sixth bowling option, which was not the case during those times.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, when you said Hartik Pandya's injury, is it a blessing in disguise or not? Who knows? Who knows? I think on one hand, yes, it brought Shami into the team, but maybe that was something that we could have done anyway, right? We could have got Shami into the team and had Hartik at number six, and therefore had a much longer list of bowlers.
Maybe if his this overall injury would have been for just for 2-3 games, it would have been good. Like Shami came in, we saw what Shami can do, and then maybe in the last couple of matches or 3 matches, if Hardik would have been there, maybe the story would have been different.
Yeah. This is a World Cup, and you know, there are many teams that are playing this World Cup, and you and I are fans of India.
Yeah.
But we've also managed to get 2 other guests onto this podcast who've just joined us. One is a fan of England, and so we have Jack Ayling on this team, an English fan who's been on this podcast, I think, 3 or 4 times before. Jack, can you hear us? Are you around?
I can. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you. Thanks for joining, Jack. We'll get your thoughts on India, but I want to introduce as well the other fan that we have, the other guest. And this is Umar Ali, fan of Pakistan. Umar, are you around?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you both for joining. Jack, firstly, did you find anything maybe stupid in what Sumit or I were saying, or what shocked you in what we were saying, or did you agree with everything?
No. I wouldn't say anything shocking or anything. I think with India, like they were just unlucky today. I think you don't see any teams that in any tournament sport that win every game, and I think they probably could have done with losing the game in the group stages. To win 10 on the bounce and not win a tournament is just unfortunate. And there wasn't anything wrong with their team or their tactics or whatever. They just had a bit of an off day today. And that was that.
Umar, you were very disappointed on behalf of Virat Kohli as a self-proclaimed Virat Kohli fan. How are you feeling?
I'm disappointed, but also I can see like us. Australia just played really, really well. And Virat Kohli's innings as well you could tell, like, he was working really hard. And they were bowling really, really well. And the fielding, and it was just perfect. And yeah, I can't complain too much. India played very well. And yeah, I'm happy.
So, Sumit, where does India go from now when it comes to one-day international cricket only? Who do you think is perhaps not going to continue in this Indian team, and who are the new superstars that might replace them? And let's not talk about the World Cup 4 years from now. That's too far away to talk about. Let's talk about just the next year or so.
First thing, see, I know despite of the heartache, I don't want to say like some of the fans when they get angry, but I feel after this World Cup, this is the time when Rohit should step down, not because of the poor performance, or there is no poor performance. He has been a fabulous leader. He has been really good. The team, we had a good tournament, but I don't see Rohit playing the next World Cup, which is in 2027. He's already 36 plus. And looking at the number of ODIs, what we have in the next 2 or 3 years, now somebody, we should get into 2027 World Cup with a new fresh captain who should have 3 to 4 years of experience. So I don't see him playing. Apart from then, I find it difficult that we will have Surya Kumar in the next, whenever we are playing the next ODIs. And I feel Jaiswal will be the one coming in the place of Rohit Sharma. And I see Tilak Verma or maybe Ishan Kishan, Ruturaj Gaikwad. These are the players who are going to take place in the middle order.
Okay. Yeah, good names. I think perhaps maybe there's one or two pace bowlers, really strong seam bowlers who we need to find. We know some names who've been good recently in T20 cricket, but can they make the step up in a way to ODI cricket?
Yeah, what I have seen, like Rohit, he was not playing T20s from the past 1 year and he was only concentrating on the one days. I think he should do the same for the next 1 year. He should not play one days anymore. Let maybe KL Rahul or Hardik take the new leadership role and they should develop the team for the next World Cup. And Rohit should concentrate. He should play. I don't see him that he is out of the contention of 2024 T20 World Cup. He should not start focusing on that format.
Yeah. Umar, you are saying T20 specialist. Who do you think? Surya Kumar Yadav as a T20 specialist?
I mean, I was just wondering because as Sumit said, and I agree with him, Sky is famous and he is typical 360 player. And I was just wondering, why do you think he hasn't performed well? Is it because he's a T20 player mostly?
If I were to answer that, I think yes. I've been following Surya Kumar Yadav for almost a decade because I know him from his Mumbai domestic days. And he was always a good batsman, but he was never probably not even the top one or two or three batsmen in the team. And now he made a name for himself recently as a T20 specialist with those unorthodox shots that he plays, particularly on good decks. But in tricky conditions like today, when you want him to bat 20 overs, he does not seem to me as the right person. I think you want someone who either is more stable or someone who offers you more dimensions, which basically means someone who can bowl a bit as well. So if you have a Hardik Pandya or any other kind of all-rounder, a batsman who can hit hard but can also play a good 10-15 overs, then that person would slot in ahead of Surya Kumar. Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to add about India's performance or India's future, or do you want to move on to Australia?
I just wanted to ask a question about India, and specifically Jadeja. Why is he not an option to bat at six and then have another all-rounder come in, like perhaps Ashwin or Thakur, if you wanted to have an extra bowler?
So I think Jadeja is still a bowler who bats, particularly in ODIs. In Test match cricket, I think he's fantastic as a batting option as well. And I don't think India needs to go in with five pure batsmen plus one bowling all-rounder plus five other bowlers, of which maybe another can be an all-rounder like an Ashwin or a Thakur. I think getting someone who's a batsman who bowls a bit will give India a lot more depth, particularly because after Jadeja or one other all-rounder that you're talking about, the batting tail is very long. We will still have four batsmen who cannot really bat too well. And so I think seven is the right spot for Jadeja, particularly in ODIs.
In this, I would like to add one thing that I feel it's not a bad idea that Jadeja can bat on six. But the thing is, if Hardik is there, then Hardik fits perfectly at number six and Jadeja at number seven. Even if we would like to play Jadeja at six, it's not a bad option. But we don't have any player who can play at seven as a batsman and is an all-rounder, because the other names like Ashwin is not a number seven batsman, and we talk about like if Deepak Chahar or maybe Akshar, we can say he can be at number a good number seven and all-rounder, but again Akshar and Jadeja being like to like people, I don't think India will go with two all-rounders and both being a left arm orthodox spinner. The problem is if we have someone who can bat a good and they can be a good number seven batsman, it will be difficult.
Yeah, I think this is where we should move on to Australia, and I think Australia have quite a few options at that position who are good batsmen and can bowl a little bit as well. One name we didn't see too much of in this World Cup, didn't perform too well, is Cameron Green. And the other name is Marcus Stoinis. And I'm sure Cameron Green is going to be playing many, many more years for Australia. And Stoinis will also continue playing for a while. But I think those are the sort of players that that make Australia such a formidable force with their batting and also rounds out their entire team. Of course, they also have other batsmen who bowl, like Maxwell and Travis Head. So let's first start with Maxwell specifically. Jack, have you ever seen a better one-day international innings than the one that Maxwell played against Afghanistan?
It's very, very hard to think of any that come anywhere close. I think given the circumstances and the fact they were so many wickets down, the win predictor had Afghanistan at 99.2%. The fact he did it on his own, really. Cummins just played a very, 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 like, he was there, but he was just not even contributing runs, just making sure he wasn't getting out. And then to add in Maxwell's injuries with falling off the golf cart a few days before and then was cramping up and everything, that was phenomenal. It was just fantastic to see the way he was swinging at the ball as if he was just playing golf. Like his feet were just as if they were just in cement. Yeah. I don't know. You do very well to see anything better than that. I think arguably the best ever, and I couldn't put any innings better than that in one day cricket. Maybe all cricket the way it went, to be honest with you.
What did you guys think of the other performers? David Warner, how was his batting? Do you think you had expected something like this of Travis Head or Mitchell Marsh at the top?
I think I'd like to add a little bit. I think continuing from Jack's, Maxwell's feet reminded me a bit like Sehwag's, the way he didn't move them at all at one point. And did you guys also realize how cricket, like, something like this happens and then all the matches which happened after, if the team was six down, you still think, well, yeah, they're going to chase it because, you know, Maxwell did the other day. But yeah, that was incredible. But David Warner, yeah, he played very well. Travis Head, we all expected him to play innings like this.
We expected him.
Yeah, I thought he would because he's, you know, one typical baseball type player. So yeah, I definitely expected him.
Okay, I didn't. I knew he'd start well. I didn't think he'd be there till the end. So yeah, I think you would have made some good money if you thought that he's going to make 100 or 125 or whatever he did. But yeah. Of course, kudos to him. He took the game away like he did earlier this year.
Yeah, we went together.
We went for the game at the World Test Championship. Yeah, so he's had a great year. Yeah. What about Australia's bowling? Sumit, what did you think about particularly Australia's spin bowling?
Australia's spin bowling, I think Zampa did well. He didn't start it well in the initial couple of games and they had the hard games. Australia played first. Their first match was against India and the second was against South Africa. And it was a poor games, both of them. And I think Zampa was not able to land ball properly. He was giving a lot of full tosses down the legs. He was quite haywire. And he was very important member of their team. And it was important for them, him to fire. And he really started firing after those messages. Matches. If you see the way Australia have won 9 matches on the trot, there's a huge contribution from Zampa's side.
Yeah. Where do Australia go from here now? What else can they win now? Create a new format or something? What else is there for Australia to win? They've won everything.
I don't think anything is left. I think they won 2021 T20, WTC, Ashes, now the ODI World Cup, I don't think anything is left. I think what is left is the number one ranking across all three formats.
Which, when did they last get number one ranking?
In all three formats, I don't know. I think it's difficult for one team to get the number one ranking all three formats, though India has done, but I think it's a matter of time because the good 3-4 teams, they are hardly a couple of points apart from each other in all formats.
Yeah, I would also think, as you mentioned, at number one rank, I don't think they have been. They used to be pretty bad in T20s, but recently they won T20 World Cup as well. I would say that their greatest strength is the adaptability. They can be really bad, but they just figure out straight away and they just sort themselves out, and you know, you see the difference. Unlike different teams like Pakistan, who have been playing same kind of cricket for a long time. Yeah, that's their greatest strength, to change themselves.
I think with Australia...
We'll come to Pakistan. Go ahead, Jack.
Sorry. I was just going to say with Australia, the three seamers they have, Stark, Cummins and Hazelwood, they play all three formats. If they have a big game, then they'll bring them back in. They played all the T20s, they played all the one dayers and the tests as well. And I just think they're so strong for them. They're arguably the best trio of pacers the game has seen. To be honest, they're up there with anyone, really. The variety they have and just the skill and accuracy, they're just given so much, and they have a chance with any game that those three are playing them.
But are you also saying that maybe they're, at least some of them, are towards the end of their careers, and so maybe the Australian team will not be able to replicate the success that these three have given them?
I actually don't know the ages of them off the top of my head. I'd say Stark is probably the oldest, and then Hazelwood. They'll have some job replacing them. You saw Bolland, who came in and was looking like he was the next big thing, and then he got absolutely thrashed around in England. So it's gonna be tough for anyone to come in and try and take one of those spots. But yeah, be interested to see where they go. I think they're one of a number of teams at the end of the cycle.
Yeah, it looks like Cummins is 30, but Sean Abbott, who was backup pacer, is 31.
Yeah.
Probably they'll have some others who'll emerge from the Big Bash. Australia, I think Australia have always been getting players in their late 20s anyway into the team. You know, unless you're these kind of superstars like Cameron Green is going to be. So, you know, maybe there's someone who's doing really well that we don't know of yet, or at least I don't know of.
There's one geezer who was meant to play in the Ashes, who's very quick, but I can't remember the name of him. He got injured, done his stress factor or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess that guy's one to keep an eye on. But then outside of that, I can't really think of anyone.
Yeah, Australia, I would say the same. It's just they have so many fast bowlers. They love fast bowling over there. They kind of had those legends like Lilly and, you know, many others. But yeah, there are many more. Daniel Sams, Jay Richardson come to mind. Michael Neeser, who is such a good bowler, doesn't get a spot in the team. So yeah, Australia have a lot of options in the future, for sure. Billy Stanley, another name, which we don't see anymore, but he was very fast.
But what do you think? I think where many countries, Arjun, what do you think? Where many countries, they are struggling to find all-rounders in their team. When you see Australia with Stoinis, Cameron Green not playing in the 11, and when they have Marsh, Travis Head, and all these people, what do you think? They are.
Well, I would never have imagined that they'd go into such a large tournament without both of Green and Stoinis being there in every match. I think Marsh has, in the last 12 months or something, has done really, really well. So he's proven himself to be ahead of the other two in the pecking order, which is good for him. But a player as well-rounded as Stoinis, who had a very good 2019 World Cup, and I'm a big fan of Cameron Green, for them to be missing out means that that the others are actually performing exactly what they want out of them. And you have to include players like Travis Head and Glenn Maxwell in there as well when you talk about all-rounders, especially on these conditions that we're seeing in the subcontinent. Such players are so valuable because they end up bowling quite a few overs in the middle, which is really good for the Australian team.
Arjun, I wanted to ask one question. What did you make of Australia very quickly dropping Alex Carey for someone who is not as good in international cricket as Alex Carey?
I don't think Alex Carey or Inglis had too much of a difference in the way that they had come into the lineup. I think they both, pedigree wise, yes, Alex Carey was around for longer, but he wasn't doing much in the start of the tournament, and so I think it was not surprising at all what happened. It's not like Inglis has come and set the world alight, but but he's an option. So I'd say, yeah, if there's any weak link right now, it's that you don't have an Adam Gilchrist level player, or even someone who's 60% as good as him.
Bit like KL Rahul, maybe.
Okay, I've been trying to move on to New Zealand. Let's move on to New Zealand. And, you know, we're talking about pace bowling legends. Really, there are these two legends in New Zealand who just keep on going. They keep on going, and then they keep coming up with one or two other really fast bowlers to play alongside them. So let's talk about the fast bowlers of New Zealand before we move on to their batting. Jack, do you see these guys stopping? Do you see New Zealand continuing to perform at this level that they are, where they've been reaching the semi-finals or finals of pretty much every ICC tournament in the past 4, 5, 6 years?
I don't know. You couldn't put it past them. They always seem to find a way, but they're going to miss Trent Bolt. And Southie, I think, is 34 now, so he hasn't got too long left. I thought Lockie Ferguson was going to be a big player for them, but he went for a lot of runs in this tournament. He never really seemed to be able to hold down an end. So, yeah, I think bowling-wise, they'll really struggle to replace those two, specifically Trent Bolt. I think Bolt is the one who's able to take wickets at the top end and consistently like break through against the top players. And with him not taking a central contract, I think that's it's a big sign that he's going to go off and just play T20 cricket and not play international cricket anymore.
Okay, and who wants to tell us what they think about Rahul Sachin, Mr. Rachin Ravindra?
Yeah, I can jump in. Rachin is a player. Honestly, I follow a lot of cricket, even at domestic level, and every time I would see a match of New Zealand A or any domestic match, he would overperform. And I knew him like it's been like 3-4 years, and yeah, he always perform in big matches, and yeah, I'm not surprised. He just changed the world, and I'm actually a little bit surprised by the oppositions he have scored against centuries, very big teams. But no, he's a very very good player, and so good to watch.
Yeah, I don't think his domestic record actually is something extremely inspiring, particularly in limited overs, in even in T20s.
I think but in both. He's
done incredibly well in the last year or so, right? And year and a half, and even in his visit to India. But it's more about the way he's applying himself in the batting. He doesn't seem at all fearful of the pedigree of the bowler who's bowling to him. He seems to have every shot, and he plays sweetly. His pull shots are fabulous. I haven't seen such quick hands from a batsman like he has. I mean, it's almost like Shubman Gill in the way he pulls really strongly off the front foot. And he's, I think, the same age as Gill in a way, 23, I think, roughly.
24.
So, yeah, I think he's a masterpiece in the making. Right? I'm a big fan of his.
When you say that his list A record and the first class record is not that great, one of the reason is that he has been playing well down the order. He has been playing number 5, number 6, even when he did his debut against India in the test match. He played at number 7. So he was playing, I think, from the warm-up matches. He played in the top 3. He scored a century in the warm-up matches, and then they saw that the way he was batting. I think since then he started batting in the top 3. And then we have seen the real Rachin Ravindra. I think he was not a great number 6, number 7. He was not a finisher kind. He's a classic stroke player batsman. And the spot what he deserves is the top three.
But somehow I'm getting the feeling that New Zealand's batting generally has been really strong in this World Cup, but their bowling sometimes has let them down, particularly on very strong batting decks. Maybe Umar, you can tell us your thoughts about the match when New Zealand lost to Pakistan despite scoring, I think, 400 they scored, and they were unable to defend that.
Yeah, I still think that was a miracle. A little bit of me thinks maybe we wouldn't have been able to chase 400. But yeah, as you said, the bowling sometimes do let them down. But I was thinking that might be something related to all the teams, because this tournament has been very high scoring, and very good bowlers have been going for a lot of runs, except Indian bowlers. But Pakistan just very brave, took them on short boundaries as well. But yeah, bowling is a concern for New Zealand times.
Okay, let's talk about South Africa, and let's start with right at the top, the captain Themba Bavuma. There was lots of speculation about how he's going to perform in the beginning. There were talks about whether he should be is the right person to lead this team. At the end, we've realized that he's had a very bad tournament, of course. But is there any redemption that he can have as a player in this format in the future?
You see, I went. There was a South African league recently, a very very famous, and I liked watching it. But he wasn't picked, and he was South African captain.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and at that point, I was, and it's not like there's nothing against him. It's just people generally don't think he's a good limited over player, and I can see why, because he doesn't play spin very well. His feet at times just do not move. And yeah, I think if you're a captain, you can't afford to bat in such an important position and not score when everyone else is scoring. Yeah, he's definitely a weak link, I think.
And I guess he was able to continue because ultimately South Africa were playing really well. And so you could say that the captain was able to get that performance out of the team despite his own batting performance. But in the semi-final, I feel that South Africa really were not attacking enough. The game went quite deep, and had they been a bit more thoughtful, a bit more creative in their bowling changes and the field placements, then maybe the game would have become even tighter. So I don't know if he's proven himself to be the best tactician either.
Yeah, I definitely think he has this in common with a lot of other captains, including Babar Azam. But yeah, they are new captains. I don't think he's a natural leader. You know, being a good player is totally different than being a good captain. And yeah, his field placement were a little bit questionable at times.
The match, I think he didn't play the last group match, and he came for the semi-finals. And even a day before, he said he's not fully fit. He will see and then he will take a call. Do you think when he was not fully fit a day before and he was not even performing, whether he should have dropped himself from the semi-final?
I don't know. I don't think you'd do something like that. I don't think you'd take a decision so big to drop a captain from a huge match like a semi-final, particularly when whatever they've been doing has been working. I don't know who you'd have picked. Can't really say who you'd pick. Maybe Riza Hendricks. I think he didn't play that game, right? He was
no. The game which Riza Hendricks played during the group stages, he did a decent job as compared to Bavuma.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd change that. I think that's too big of a step to take during a World Cup to drop the captain of a winning team that was performing so well. But maybe they were performing well, and let's talk about them, right? They were performing well because of the other batsmen. Klassen had a class tournament.
Markram
just showed up everywhere, right? Bat, ball, field. What did Quinton end up, I think, second or third highest run scorer?
Third highest, 594, I guess, he made.
So, yeah, I think their batting was also sublime, and they took advantage of, again, the flat decks to put up really, really good scores when they batted first, and they were looking formidable doing so.
I think a lot of people from their team, just like India and Australia, there were many performers. Even if you say how good was Maharaj, he was so good with this ball. Though we missed talking about Santner in New Zealand, but these two bowlers, they have done exceptional job for their team. And how is good is Coetzee?
So good. It's one we live with, like Dale Steyn, when he takes his wickets and his eyes and his passion. Yeah, he's been a real find for South Africa. He's going to be a very good player, I think.
Yeah, and I think is Maharaj not the number one ODI bowler right now? Yeah, I think he had a good tournament, I think. Okay, Umar, it's your time to shine right now, because we'll talk about Pakistan.
Oh, yes.
So why don't you just take it away? Tell us what you think.
Okay. Well, I've got a few questions and I'll just self-answer myself. So first question is, why did Babar Azam, like his captaincy, and why did he resign? Well, first of all, I'll say Babar Azam is not a good captain. We have seen him over and over again. He's made same mistake, basic errors, and it's just repetitive errors. But good thing about him is he's good at speaking. He's a very positive person. He keeps a good environment in the team, and he gives his players chances, which is also a bad thing because some of them didn't perform and he kept giving them chances. And why did he resign? Probably not a lot of people know this. It's been more than a year that PCB wanted to get rid of Babar, and they were just a bit scared because he's an icon in Pakistan. He's a role model. And, you know, we don't have a lot of role models, so a lot of people were defending him. And recently, Najat Musaiti said on media that he actually was just a bit scared to remove Babar. But there was a backhanded pressure on him, and there was not a good environment in the team as though. He knew he's going to get stripped off captaincy. There was a WhatsApp leak as well, which is interesting because what actually happened there is Rashid Latif said in one of the shows that, Babar has been trying to contact the chairman of PCB, and the chairman has not been responding. But now what the chairman does, he basically sends a screenshot of Babar Azam saying that, no, I haven't called the chairman, to a journalist. And now the journalist leaked the screenshot on this TV show in front of the public. And people just obviously kind of backfired because people are questioned, like, why are you sharing this? It's a privacy matter. But yeah, that was really bad. That was very embarrassing of PCB chairman to actually leak someone's private message, of your captain as well. That basically he knew he's coming. And also, they say he resigned, but it's funny because he resigned and after 2 hours, PCB announced a new captain as well. And, you know, that doesn't happen. And yeah, it shows it was all pre-planned. And those two captains, by the way, one of them is Shaun Masood, who wasn't even in the team. He's dropped. And the second one is Shaheen Afridi. And both of them were not even vice captains. So yeah, there's strange things happening there.
But do you feel that all of this disharmony that you're talking about is because of the way Babar has led the side, or is it despite him being such a good value asset to the side?
I would say it goes back to the board. We had three different chairmen in last 1 year, and it's very politicized, Pakistan PCB. I mean, our chairman is appointed by Prime Minister. And whenever they come, they change the whole structure. Recently, we had a regional structure from departments. So for listeners, let me explain. So department is like, you know, your airline, for example, British Airways, who fund. But regional is, for example, Yorkshire and stuff. So we went from departments to region and now back to departments again. So yeah, there's a lot of shuffling. Every chairman has their own thoughts and there's no clarity.
And how do you think the new captains are going to be taking this new Pakistani team forward, and what other changes are there going to be in the team?
Well, I'm not really sure because Shaun Masood is our new test captain, and he was being dropped more times than I can remember. And it's not because there's some conspiracy. It's just he doesn't perform at all. And we got Australia tour coming up, and I don't think Pakistan is going to do any good. And also, I was going to move on to this question about consistent performance by bowlers, especially. And I strongly think that's because a few of our bowlers, like Aris Rauf, they have no record of first class. In fact, our whole team, most of the players are good T20 players, but they have very bad record in first class cricket. And that, I think that's the reason. A bit like Surya Kumar Yadav. And our coaches as well, we don't know who our coaches are. We have this habit of hiring foreign coaches. For example, we had Philander for a few months. We had Morin Moku for a few months. And Matthew Hayden. And then Mickey Arthur again, who is our online coach as well. So, yeah.
Online coach?
Yeah, he's a Derbyshire coach as well right now. So, he's got two jobs.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's just there's no structure at all. It's just right now our chairman is just trying to save his job and see where it goes from here. By the way, did you know Wahab Riaz is our chief selector, and who's our new head coach?
Mohammad Hafiz, right?
Mohammad Hafiz is our new head coach. That's right.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. And funny thing is, because our new board has no rights, they couldn't actually sack Mickey Arthur. So Mickey Arthur has been moved to high performance center. He's still employed by PCB.
What is actually good about the Pakistan team going forward? What is the highlight or the bright sparks that you think are going to bring Pakistan back to the levels that we've always seen them at?
Well, first of all, I think we have found a good player in Sahib Shakil. In a few episodes back, maybe the listeners might remember, I mentioned Sahib Shakil was an upbringing, uprising new batsman. He's a very good bowler, batsman as well, and can bowl. Yeah, I can see the future. And believe me or not, a good thing is Babar is not a captain anymore. So it kind of gives him, more focus for his game, because I don't think he's done justice to his talent. That's why I think there are good things about PCB right now. And one bad thing, which is we have a Champions Trophy coming up, 2023, 25, sorry, I believe. And we don't have structure, we don't have stadiums. So we need to focus on them as well.
Can I ask a question to you, Mesh, regarding the Babar's captaincy? If we go just 2 months back when this World Cup didn't start, at that time, Pakistan was number one team. They did pretty decent in all the ODI, whatever they played. And in terms of T20, again, they were number one T20 team for a good amount of time. They reached semi-final, final in both the editions. So why suddenly the question mark on Babar's captaincy?
I don't think there is any certain question mark. Even the games we were winning, we could tell like he was making so many mistakes. And mind you, the matches we have won, the series we have won, they have been against C teams. For example, Australia would come to Pakistan, and then you wouldn't even know the players who were playing in the team. Whereas on the other side, Pakistan were playing their best team, like the strongest team. And I think that's kind of came back to haunt them as well, because they didn't test their bench strength at all. I mean, as you can see, recently we had Naseem Shah injured. And the guy who replaced him he hadn't even played for Pakistan for the last 2 years, Hasan Ali.
Okay.
And we had someone, Mohammad Wasim, in the bench. We didn't even try him. So our bench strength is really bad, because we play our best teams against C teams, and we don't try anyone new.
Because when we talk that if these things happened, that they didn't play with the strong against the strong teams or against the strong nations, they played a lot of match against Sri Lanka and Afghanistan and all this. But I don't think this Babar, he plans the Pakistan's schedule, right? He doesn't plan that.
No.
Against which nation they should play, and when the teams are coming, whether they are B and C. Babar's job is whoever is coming, against whoever the match is there, they need to pick their best 11, play against them, win against them, and go up to the ranking. So this is my personal opinion that he didn't do that bad the way he has been portrayed. I think the question more goes to the PCB, how they have accepted those kind of schedule, why they have played so many matches against those teams, because I don't think Babar has a say in such planning, right?
No, of course not. But he does have a saying in placing the field, picking the team, you know, bowling different bowlers, rotation, and he has been very poor in all departments. I'm not saying there's a lot of talent down there which we haven't been playing, but he could have dropped few people early on. But as I mentioned earlier, he's a nice guy. He likes to give people chances and sometimes a little bit more chances to his friends, for example, Shadab. But yeah, he's been a little bit persistent with some bad players and it literally costed him his captaincy now.
I guess we just need to hope that in the near future, we get to see some new blood in this Pakistan team, and then Pakistan really comes back to the levels that we want them to be, because ultimately we don't want cricket to be a game played by 3, 4, 5 teams. We want there to be a lot of competition, and for that to happen, that means that the big three, as they're called, need to lose some big games consistently against the likes of Pakistan, South Africa, New Zealand, maybe Sri Lanka and West Indies as well. But the other team we really should talk about, this is where Jack, your expertise will be really required, is England. What's the feeling like amongst generally the England fans right now about the Cricket World Cup and the performance of this English team?
Surprise, to be honest with you. I think that the first few games we expected that we would do better. I mean, it was a real body blow to lose to New Zealand the way we did in the first game, but we never recovered from that. We have a good side. We've experienced the whole way through. But I think arguably we had too much of an old team. I think we fielded a side that were over the age of 30, all over the age of 30 for the last 3 or 4 games. And it just is the sign of a team that's at the end of its cycle. Joss Butler is never really convinced me as a captain. I think he's been batting too high at number 5. I don't think that ploy has ever worked, to have him batting as high as that. I think he needs to bat at 6 and be a bit of a finisher. Bowling wise, we picked Chris Wokes for a World Cup in India. I mean, come on, everyone knew that he wasn't going to be good enough, but we never looked at other options or found anyone that could do that job. So yeah, I think there's a number of reasons. You could say we didn't play enough one day cricket between now and the last World Cup.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think the guys thought they could just play T20 cricket and then extrapolate that to the one day game, but that hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. Seen a lot of people talk about Joe Root and say he shouldn't be in the side. I think that's nonsense. I think he's just been out of form, which can happen to anyone at any time. He's our best batsman. He needs to play one day cricket if there's a World Cup going on or whatever. But yeah, some of the other guys in the team, Bairstow's not been in form. I'm not a big fan of David Milan. I don't think he has the mental strength to really perform when it's needed. Harry Brook has all the talent in the world, but he hasn't taken any of the chances he's had. We just had a team that no one player was in form, which is such a bizarre place to be in. But it just all aligned for us to have a terrible, terrible tournament.
Jack, you mentioned Joe Root. And yeah, I totally agree with you. He's such a good limited over player. I think he was one of the very few players in England team who averaged 50 plus in ODIs. And I was very surprised to see he hadn't played much ODIs since 2019 till this World Cup. And all of a sudden he was in the team. In fact, he had to actually request the management to put him in one of the one days against Ireland. So why do you think he was not played much?
I think that you see with the England side, they just play so much more cricket compared to other countries, like especially test match cricket, which is so much more demanding than the other formats. You have to give these guys a rest at some point. And they decided that they wanted to rest them in the one day stuff. And maybe they didn't reintroduce him soon enough, to give them some time to practice before the World Cup. But yeah, the schedule probably dictated that he didn't have much of an opportunity. If he was informed, then it wouldn't be, no one would be talking about it. But the way he's been getting out, I think he's just trying a little bit too hard at times. Like, he's had a bit of a confidence issue.
Yeah, I think that comes with lack of matches. Yeah, now he's a very good player. I would not drop him. Also, you mentioned David Milan. I am the same, but I kind of question, why do I think that? Because he every time he plays, he kind of performs. Like, for example, this World Cup as well, he was probably the best batter after Stokes for England. But as he mentioned like other day as well, he was like, I don't know which match is going to be my last match, because no one really cared about me or rate me. Like, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the thing with Root. Root wasn't.
Why do we think that?
So Milan was, and he got the opportunity to bat at three, and batting at three is probably the best place to bat in a one-day game, because it gives you the opportunity to bat for a long time. If you lose any wicket, you can take your time to get in, and you can kick on later on. And I think his average, he's got a fantastic average and a pretty good strike rate as well. But I've just never been convinced by him. I've never once seen him play and thought, this guy should be in England's best 11. And it baffles me. But again, you look at the World Cup, right? He's got 100 against Bangladesh. I mean, yeah, we won that game, but mate, like, it's Bangladesh, really. Like, we should be winning those games. We lost. We lost against all the best teams, and nobody stood up. Dava Milan didn't stand up. Joe Root didn't stand up. Ben Stokes didn't stand up.
And so Bairstow.
Bairstow as well. That's when Milan should have been standing up and really making his case for, look, I deserve to be in this team. And look, I may be being overly critical of him. But when you're comparing him to players like Root, Stokes, who are proven players in tournament cricket and in high pressure situations, this is the bar that we have to be judging players on, and for me, he doesn't quite do enough. Yeah,
so you're saying you would have taken Jason Roy instead?
I don't know if I'd have taken Jason Roy instead. Which is interesting, because it probably goes back into the conversation we were having around with England, where the preparation wasn't correct and everything. There's a number of players which could have gone instead. Will Jacks is one. Phil Salt is another one. But these guys, they didn't play enough cricket between now and the last World Cup. They've been playing a lot of T20 cricket, but they haven't played enough one-day cricket and proven that they can bat a long time over 50 overs. Personally, I think Will Jacks is the one that has the potential to really kick on and be a player there for us. But they just haven't had enough opportunities. Ben Duckett is another one. He's played a lot of test cricket and done well there.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been able to play any one-day cricket and really make his case. So yeah, it's a weird one. It's like, you can't say that England as a whole haven't played enough cricket, because they've played loads of cricket, but they haven't played enough one-day internationals. And I think the strategy towards the next World Cup will be very different. They'll definitely play more one-days, and they'll definitely give players they think should be playing at the tournament more cricket. I mean, look at the attitude towards Ben Stokes, where he retires, and everyone knew that retirement wasn't worth the paper it was written on. He was definitely going to play at the World Cup, and he gets jettisoned back into the team. And the whole attitude, it was, you could say it was arrogance, you could say it was confidence, whatever. Like, it didn't pay off, and they have to do things differently for the next World Cup, because it was embarrassing. Like, we done well not to finish bottom, to be honest. And like, yeah, we done very, very well to qualify for the Champions Trophy and bring it back a little bit. But imagine England hadn't qualified for the Champions Trophy, like, after being some people's favourites for that tournament. It's crazy to sit here with hindsight and say that it went that way. But But yeah, I think the biggest thing is preparation and the selection and not giving enough people opportunities and whatever. Like, we have so many talented players, people that will never get a sniff of international cricket that could walk into other countries' teams. And it's just about giving these guys an opportunity to prove themselves. And maybe you have the Milans who can put good numbers up, but when the crunch comes, they can't do it. Maybe they need to unearth the next player who, when the crunch does come, they can do it. It could be Harry Brook. He hasn't really done it so far.
But... And do you think that's because Ben Stokes coming back and then Harry Brook's thinking, oh my God, am I playing? Am I not playing? You know, it plays in your mind.
Potentially, yeah. I'm quite ruthless with this. Like, I think if someone's good enough, that they will take the opportunity when it comes. They won't worry about the ins and outs of it. I'm a Hampshire lad, and James Vince has been fantastic for us. Jason Roy got injured at the last World Cup, and Vince came in, and I was like, right, this is when we'll find out if James Vince is good enough. And he fumbled it. He fumbled the bag, and I don't think he scored more than 20, 30 runs in each innings he got. And that was it. I wrote him off as an international player at that point, because you shouldn't... You see all these fantastic players. How many of the best players we watch that have played world cricket have scored 100 on their test match debut? They all fucking do it. When they're that good, they do it. And it's... Yeah, like I said, it's just about finding these players who can make that step up and perform for England when the crunch comes. And we just haven't really had a chance to give those players an opportunity, because we hadn't played enough cricket, and we kind of settled on this side we had, which we thought was good enough, but in reality just was nowhere near. So yeah, I mean, I've probably gone on a hell of a tangent there, but yeah, there's many reasons why England haven't done well.
No, you're right, Jack. I totally agree. But I do think England are good enough. They have got the players who can easily change the match. It's just maybe they're tired. Maybe it's just been a bad tournament, bad form. But they're definitely good enough, I think.
Yeah, actually, I had a similar viewpoint, which is a bit different to Jack's. I think maybe to some degree, every team in hindsight will say that there's something wrong in selection and there's something else. That very valid argument to say that these players have not had enough practice in the one-day format, or that they've been overburdened with too much of test cricket. But I think, Jack, you yourself said that pre-tournament England were one of the favourites. And then if on paper they are one of the favourites, then it is very surprising that they ended up towards the bottom of the table and 10th for so long. But that means that there's not really that much wrong in the selection, perhaps barring one or two things. And there is something that happened during the tournament itself, maybe after the first one or two performances, England lost the opening game. That maybe team morale just dropped and they never were able to pick themselves up. Maybe they were relying too much on one or two superstars, which they should not have. Maybe something else happened. Or maybe it's just luck, right? Maybe like Umar, you were alluding to, it's just been one bad month, right? But that doesn't mean that this is a bad team. So I think maybe there's something of that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Something I didn't mention was the fact that Owen Morgan retired just over a year ago now. And so we're still coming out of that. And the coaching has changed. We recently had Matthew Mott come in, and he hasn't really done anything majorly impressive since he's taken over. So maybe it's a case of the management
won the World Cup.
Yeah, they won the World Cup. Yeah, they did, but then they won the World Cup after Morgan had come out. You know, like maybe they hadn't quite had a chance to change things. But I don't know. We're trying to figure out what's going on from the outside. But I think what Arjun said about losing your first game and knowing that it was going to be very hard to come back from that. You heard people say straight after that first game that England will have a tough job to qualify because of the way we lost that game with a net run rate. And to lose that, to have people saying that on the first game of the tournament, and it's been a long tournament now, it's been going on for a number of weeks, you're always playing catch up, and it has to have some kind of effect on your mindset. And then maybe they didn't didn't quite have the mental strength to come back from that. But yeah, it's thoroughly disappointing after the way we've been in the build-up to the 2019 World Cup, to win it the way we did, and the matches and the performances we've had since then. It's very disappointing because we all thought we had a chance going into this World Cup, and you've seen now, like with the side of Australia going and winning it, they've got that ticker, as I would say, they have that way of winning, which England just didn't. They didn't have that nous about them. So yeah, disappointing.
Jack, I wanted to ask one more question. For example, there was a change in focus in England from Test to ODIs, and then obviously they won the ODI World Cup, and then after there was a change on focus to Test, and now they are not as good in ODI. As an English fan, which trade-off do you prefer? Do you prefer your team to be very good at Test or very good at ODIs?
That's some question. I have to say, Umar, that's a great.
You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
There's only one answer.
I always love to see us do well in Test cricket, and
obviously
the time I really preferred, really loved watching us was when Andrew Strauss was captain, and we just felt that any game or any series we went into, we had a chance of winning, and I feel like now we have that same feeling with Ben Stokes as captain. Though, for me, now I do not miss any Test match cricket that England play. I could be doing anything, but I will tune in as much as possible over all 5 days to watch it. Whether that's staying up until fucking 4 or 5 in the morning to watch us in New Zealand when we are trying to chase something down on the last day, or having to take time off work to watch us in the Ashes or whatever. I will always do that. And one day cricket, I just don't quite have that same connection to it outside of the World Cup. I think when the World Cup's on, you always want to win that. There is a magic towards the one day World Cup, but with the bilateral cricket and everything, I don't feel the same way about one day cricket as I do about Test match. No.
England's next Test series is, unless I'm mistaken, is against India. England is going to tour India. In a couple of months in January for 5 Test matches. I think it's the first time that there'll be 5 Test matches played. So, Jack, you're going to join us. I think we'll try and do a preview before that tournament as well, and maybe during it as well. So let's hear from you again over there.
I have one question for Jack. One last question for England before we move on to the next country. It's, do you think, Jack, that having, if you see on paper, England had the smallest tail. Even the people till number 9, number 10, they were pretty good batters. Do you think it backfired? Because sometimes in India, the conditions were tough and you need to sometimes respect the conditions, build up some partnership, but they were still going behind the bowlers, thinking that still they have plenty of batting left, and it backfired. And just to have this long tail, do you think that the England compromised on the quality of bowlers? Let's say if we say David Willey, Chris Wokes, are these the current number 1, number 2 ranked bowlers, what they can play in their team?
That's an interesting question, Sumit, I have to say. I would, one thing is for sure, is we definitely compromised on the quality of our bowling attack to give ourselves a longer tail. I think it is the benefit of hindsight, it definitely did backfire on us. I mean, I touched on Chris Wokes beforehand, that his bowling just was not up to standard. He ended up having a good World Cup and taking a few wickets and coming back into it. But this is when the pressure was off then. The thing is, I'm not entirely sure who those bowlers could have been for us. But this is the point going back to, they had obviously had relied too much on Wokes and Willey in between the last two tournaments, that they didn't have anyone else they could go out to. They ended up picking Gus Atkinson, which I thought was quite left field to bring someone of that in last minute into the tournament squad, and then he didn't really impress either. So it's like, why did they decide to go with him when they could have picked other players who had played test cricket and were deemed good enough to bowl 20 overs in a day, which was interesting. So yeah, to answer your question, we definitely compromised on the quality of bowling attack to give us ourselves a longer tail, and I for sure I think it had an effect on our bowl, like the strength of our bowling attack, and maybe it did have an effect on the batsmen. They thought that we could bat a little bit longer. You've seen it with Australia, the way they bat, their top order take a lot of responsibility and ensure that they set up the innings and give themselves as much opportunity to bat 50 overs, and we haven't done that. But sure, like the thing is, we can score 300, but the bowlers are not good enough to bowl a team out for below 350 on these pitches. So yeah, it's kind of like six of one and a half dozen the other. I think truly we didn't pick the best 11 players English players for this tournament, and that was the biggest thing that let us down, because we were going in with I don't know whether I say a second string side is a bit harsh, but we definitely weren't going in with the team that was our strongest.
Okay, we have four teams left and we have four of us. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give each one of us one team, and each one of us has one topic that they can talk about regarding that team. So I'll do the allocations, and I'll start with Afghanistan, and I'll allocate Afghanistan to Umar. So Umar, can you just tell us one thing that you want to talk about with the Afghan team, and maybe if that thing is related to how Afghanistan has performed despite issues that they may have had with their board as well, and how that compares with Pakistan. Maybe that's a topic that you may want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. Afghanistan, everyone thought were very impressive. And I think the core reason is their bowling. Few of the bowlers play in IPL, the likes of Nabi, Rashid and Mujib. And they're very good players. Rashid Khan, I would think is good enough for any team in the world. So bowling is very good. Their batting was always a kind of a bad aspect of their game, but they kind of sorted that out as well. For example, their openers are top class. Ibrahim Zadran is becoming one of my favorite players as well. So they've definitely worked on that. They hired Jonathan Trott and Ajay Jadeja as well, which was very smart, because Ajay Jadeja obviously is a very smart street cricketer. So yeah, they've been hugely impressive, and they're definitely more focused and clear in the head than Pakistan cricket right now.
Yep. Okay, Sumit, your team is Bangladesh. What did you think about Bangladesh, and maybe try and fit in the Shakib Al Hasan appeal as well?
I think Bangladesh had their problems right from the starting. Started from their selection when they excluded Tamim. At that moment only all these things started, that they have problem in their camp. And whenever you have problem in your camp, it's very difficult that you are going to perform in the major tournaments like World Cup. And we saw this. I don't see Shakib as a very strong leader. We saw that even they kept on chopping their batting order, they kept on changing. Mehdi Hasan, who even made a century, he batted right from number 1 to number 8. They never had like a proper set batting order, no proper bowling order. He sometimes, when the conditions were difficult, Shakib was dropping himself to number 6. Sometimes in the easier batting conditions, he was promoting himself to number 3, number 4. It was a pretty odd decision making by him. And it showed. Even I don't know whether I would have never, as a cricketer, even when we play, I will never appeal somebody for if somebody is coming on time and the strap is going off. I think it was very awkward.
Okay, thank you, Sumit. I'll go next, and the team that I pick is Sri Lanka, which means later, Jack, you'll get Netherlands. I'll tell you about Sri Lanka, and since Sumit, you didn't talk about the Shakib Al Hasan appeal, I'll fit that into here. I think generally Sri Lanka's problem has been their batting to such an extent that we are so far away from the era of Jayasurya and then later Jayawardhan, Sangakkara, that we don't know where this Sri Lankan team is going to go from now. They have had to rope in a semi-retired, unfit Angelo Matthews back into the team. They did not even qualify for the Champions Trophy, right? So they were below some teams that performed really poorly themselves. And then at the end of the World Cup, just after they exited the tournament, they, as a team, they were suspended by the ICC. And their board is in disarray. So I really don't know where they're going to go from here. We know that Kusal Mendes has been out of form as well after getting his captaincy. There is maybe a bright spark, which is especially in the first bit of the tournament, Madhu Shankar had a pretty decent tournament with the ball. But I really worry for Sri Lanka. It seems to me that all the signs point towards them going the way of Zimbabwe and West Indies. And that will be really sad for a team of Sri Lanka's pedigree. I hope I'm wrong. I must talk about the timed out incident because we should talk about that in such a World Cup recap. I think everyone is absolutely right in really being up in arms against Shakib because of him actually upholding that decision. It was probably not the right thing to do. Definitely, if there's anything related to the spirit of the game, maybe that's not the right thing to do. But it's very hard to really know what happened because there were so many different angles to the story. First, it appeared that there was a malfunction of the helmet. Then we hear the fourth umpire come and say that actually the batsman in this case, Angelo Matthews, was ready too late anyway, and the malfunction happened after time. Then there's a Twitter comment from Angelo Matthews himself saying it happened 1:54. So there's so much going on behind the scenes that every day the story took a different turn. So it was difficult to know really what the conversations were. But from our vantage point, without really knowing what happened, we can only see what we've seen on our screens. It seemed to me that maybe this was something that Shakib may come to regret, even though he said that he did this because he thought that it's the best thing in the circumstances for his team. And of course, it is a legitimate way of dismissal. It's one of the 10 ways that one can get dismissed. So it's acceptable. It's still something that maybe was not right at that moment. So that's my thought on the timed out.
There's one more thing, which is very strange. Tamim Iqbal, he retired, and then Prime Minister of Bangladesh requested him to not retire, come back to the team, and he did, but then he got dropped from the team. Is that right?
Yeah, you never know what's going on. Really, these are pieces of entertainment for us, right? I think one thing I would want to add is from a tournament organization perspective. I think this has been a very good World Cup. The format, there are question marks over the format because we can say that we kind of had an idea of the top four quite early, and then there wasn't really that much left to play for. But some upsets or some close upsets, especially the Pakistan-South Africa game and the Australia-Afghanistan game, plus this rule of the top eight teams qualifying for the Champions Trophy, these things brought in some excitement towards the end. But now that we're talking about Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, I feel like in terms of organization, if we have a situation where India is hosting the World Cup, this is probably the time to have Bangladesh and Sri Lanka as well host some games, especially the home games that Bangladesh and Sri Lanka themselves would play. I don't know about Pakistan and Afghanistan. Let's keep them out for now. But I feel like that is something that's required, especially for the continued success of the sport in Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. Let's talk about the last team over here. Netherlands. Jack, maybe just give us your thoughts about their win over South Africa and in general, what should the way forward be for not just Netherlands, but the associate nations or lesser teams for the next few years?
I thought they were quite plucky at this tournament. They always gave themselves a chance. They certainly have a lot of experience in their side with players like Van der Merwe and Colin Ackerman, who isn't the most prestigious of county cricketers, but seems to have found a niche there for himself as a spin bowler all rounder for Holland. Yeah, their win over South Africa was quite impressive. I mean, they certainly have a vested interest in wanting to beat South Africa, given that so many of those players would have been South Africans that have qualified through for the Netherlands via grandparents or such. So I think for them it's a little bit of a grudge match, and they kind of want to prove to the South Africans that they were good enough to play for them or whatever. But yeah, I think in general with the associate sides, the 10-team World Cup just doesn't give any of them a real chance of showcasing themselves properly to have a World Cup with West Indies not here. Teams such as Ireland or Nepal, who recently have been starting to impress, or Namibia. This was the World Cup is the chance for them to get an opportunity to play against all of the top sides and gain experience in a pressure situation. And the way these tournaments are set up is just wrong, in my opinion. We should be giving them giving these teams an opportunity to go and do that and go and play against all these top teams and get that experience. But we just decide to play everyone once each. We don't have a quarter final. We just go straight into a semi final, which you said yourself, Arjun, is not very good, given that the top four, we knew who the top four were going to be quite early. There was kind of that lull period in between that happening and the rest of the group stages, which isn't very exciting for anyone watching. I think things need to change, in my opinion. Gone are the days of us seeing a side like Kenya make the semi-finals, because they'd have to win 5 out of 9 games, which just isn't going to happen with the way it goes at the moment. So disappointing with the way it's set up and the way that associates are hamstrung in that sense. They never really get the opportunity to play bilaterals against the top teams. They only will get given one or two games here or there, and then they have to spend the rest of the time playing against each other, which isn't going to be a great learning experience.
Okay. So we've done our 10 teams. I can't wait till the next World Cup 4 years from now, and nobody watching ODI cricket again until then. Just continuing to watch the T20 series and the upcoming T20 World Cup next year. But before we close this episode, I just want to do a little exercise. I want the four of us to agree on the best 11 players, create a team of best 11 based on performances from this World Cup. And let's make a standard team with your 6 batsmen, all-rounder, and 4 bowlers, and a keeper somewhere in the middle.
Can I go first?
Go first.
Quinton de Kock has to be an opener and the wicketkeeper for me.
Any arguments?
No arguments from my side.
Right, and then with him, who do you have opening? I would think of Rohit Sharma, as he has to fit in.
Yeah, definitely.
Volume of runs as well as the speed of runs.
Travis Head. he's kind of made a good claim for that spot after today's performance.
I wouldn't drop Quinton de Kock for Travis Head, you know.
I understand that Travis Head had a really great semi-final and final, but do you think can you drop a player, Rohit, who has made 600 runs, and not just 600 runs, he has made the 600 runs with impact. He has made runs on all the pitches, all kind of pitches, and with a very, very good strike rate.
You know what? If Rohit Sharma can have the same fitness of Travis Head, then he's probably the best ever opener.
No, we are talking if we have to make the tournament best 11.
Oh yeah, I would definitely prefer Rohit over Travis Head.
Okay, so let's go with them as our openers, Quinton de Kock and Rohit. Who would you have in the next three positions then? Or let's start with number three. I guess the options are Virat Kohli, if we fit Rachin Ravindra somewhere, maybe he fits in. Three is an option for him. I don't know if you can fit him at four. Any other names? Maybe because Virat has to be there, right? He's the highest
scorer. Player of the tournament as well.
Yeah, so Virat should be there. So let's put Virat in there.
Yeah, I think that's a shoo-in.
So then does Rachin Ravindra fit in at four? That's cheating, right? Because he didn't play at four. But I don't know who else would have.
I don't think we had a very great number four players in this tournament.
I think maybe Virat can fill in number four.
No, I wouldn't do that. I think let's just make three his position.
Well, but who are the other batsmen? We've already got a wicketkeeper in there, so we can pick six batsmen.
We've got Mitchell.
Mitchell's a shell.
Darryl Mitchell. Yeah,
he's a shell.
Shreyas Iyer.
We've got Rahul.
Shreyas Iyer's made 500 as well.
I think Markram, Miller and Klaassen all deserve a shout. The way they performed in the tournament.
Yeah, Klaassen, yeah.
It's Klaassen. Yeah, so Klaassen has to be in there, I guess, right? Maybe at five.
Yeah, five.
Because your wicketkeeper is Quinton de Kock, so you don't even need KL Rahul in the team. So pick Klaassen at five.
We can have maybe Markram as well. Markram made 400 runs. Klaassen had
373.
370 something.
Okay.
Markram had few wickets as well. It can be Markram or Klaassen.
Markram or Klaassen. Okay, so let's just go with Markram, and then we still haven't found a number four. If it's not,
we can have Iyer has made 530 runs at good, with 113 strike rate. We can have Iyer, but if we are looking that we need a bowler as well, if we don't want to make Indian 11. Rachin, we have already finalized at four, right? I think we're talking for number five. I think we're talking number five.
Both five. So I think we said five Markram. Four is still open.
Four but is Rachin.
Rachin.
Rachin. Yeah, it has to be Rachin.
He can bowl as well.
Yeah.
So we've got top five. Quinton, Rohit, Virat, Rachin, and Markram.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get Maxwell in at six.
Yeah, Maxwell at six.
Has to be a six, yeah.
Yeah.
And then who's your all-rounder at seven?
I think Jadeja.
Jadeja?
Yeah, Jadeja, he had average of 55 and he had decent wickets as well.
He started out well. Yeah, he's taken a lot of catches.
Mitch Marsh has scored 400 runs, actually, 441.
Yeah, but not at seven.
We are talking at number seven.
Oh, yeah. Ravindra, definitely, yeah.
Definitely?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess so. Only because I can't find any other name. And then, who's your spinner?
I think Zampa.
Should be, right? Because
he's taken his wickets.
Yeah.
He's, 23 wickets, I think? 23 wickets. Most by any spinner in the history of World Cup cricket.
Yeah, we can't leave him out. Though Kuldeep bowled well along with the economy, but Zampa, he has been exceptional.
Okay. So Jadeja 7, Zampa 8, and then now you're three fast bowlers.
Curtsy for South Africa.
Yeah.
He's taken a lot of wickets.
Curtsy, we can't leave. And then Shami with 7 strike rate and 12 average.
Shami has to. So you pick two more, right? So you pick
Curtsy is an option. 11. I'll just be done with that.
Yeah, put Shami at 11. How about two more options.
How about young Madhushanka?
Madhushanka is an option.
Madhushanka has taken 21 wickets, but he has went for a lot of runs. So if you are taking, let's say, fiver, but you are giving away 80 runs to take that fiver, I don't think we can value that fiver, because if some team is hitting 400 runs and you are getting 5 wickets out of that because they are going after you and giving wickets, I don't think so. I think I don't want to be biased towards Indians, but I think Bumrah, because a lot of teams, they have just played him out. He has in the entire tournament, he had the economy of less than 4. And he has taken good 20 wickets with less than 4 economy. Bowled in all spells.
It's hard to argue against Bumrah. Yeah.
It's a good one, but let me show you this. So Bumrah and Kozza have basically same wickets, but Kozza has played 3 less matches. I think that's very impressive.
And what is his economy, do you know?
His economy is 6.23 and Bumrah is 4.06.
I think Bumrah's lack of wickets is not because he has taken less number of wickets. People have played him out.
I agree.
Yeah. I think
if I have to choose
a player who goes for less than 4 economy and he just takes 3 wickets less in the entire tournament, I think I will go for him.
Yeah, but we're not going with any Australian pacer, despite saying that this is the best.
I think they had a very mediocre tournament.
But they won the World Cup.
Their paces have been quite rounded, though. If you look at who's taking the wickets, Josh Hazlewood has the most for the 16 from 11 games. Like, they've kind of shared the wickets around. Stark, you could say, his performance in the semi-final, like, blew Srafta away. But
Sumit might be right, actually. They had mediocre tournament, the paces.
Yeah. I think they had I don't know if it's mediocre, but I think they all had good tournaments, but there was no standout between the three of them, or among the three of them, there was no clear standout.
Yeah.
Which is why they don't have the figures that Kudzi or Shamir.
I think we can talk about who should be the third. My personal opinion is you cannot rule out Bumrah. And even India has not won the World Cup, but Bumrah and Shami, they have been exceptional the entire tournament. Bumrah with 4 economy, 20 wickets. Again, Mohammad Shami with just above 5 economy, but 24 wickets in 7 matches. For example, if I see Shaheen, he has been really good with 18 wickets, but again, economy of 6. When we say Madhushankar, economy near about 7 for 21 wickets. I think the economy plays a really important factor as well, along with the wickets.
Yeah, I can't argue. So I think what you're saying makes sense. And then your 3 fast bowlers are, could say, Shami and Bumrah.
It's hard to argue against it. Like,
it's a strong one.
You kind of just don't want to pick all the Indian players because they didn't win the tournament, but they won more games than anyone else. Like, they won 10 before today, so they're obviously going to have some good numbers there, and Bumrah was a big factor of them being as good as they were. I remember he was carrying the side before Shami came into it.
Mm-hmm. So here's the uprooted stumps best 11 of World Cup 23. It's Quinton de Kock opening with Rohit Sharma, Mumbai Indians players. Rohit Sharma captain, I suppose, with Quinton de Kock wicketkeeper. Virat Kohli at 3, Rachin Ravindra at 4, Markram at 5, Maxwell at 6. Jadeja, Zampa, and then 3 pace bowlers, Kudzi, Shami, and Bumrah.
Yeah.
Super team.
It's strong side. Team.
Yeah, very good.
Okay. Any last words, anyone? Did anyone not really like this World Cup and then they're just waiting to watch this?
Can we draft a flop 11 as well?
I think we should we should send that. We'll type that down. Unless you have a flop 11 in mind and you want to tell us what that
is. I think we can start with the opener and Captain Babuma.
Yeah, why don't you just tell us, Sumit, what is your flop 11?
I think Babuma and Imam Ul Haq, they had pretty bad tournament. Then Mendes, after the first 2 games, when he became the captain, he had a very, very mediocre tournament, Mendes. He was not able to even go past single-digit numbers. Joe Root had a very bad tournament. Shakib Al Hasan had a very, very bad tournament. He made less than 100 runs, no wickets as well. Then Butler. You know, Butler had the second worst batting average in the entire, even worse than Trent Bolt. Surprisingly, though I picked Butler as man of the tournament, I predicted him to be the man of the tournament, but he failed pretty miserably. Then Moeen Ali as a spinner, Shadab Khan. Moeen Ali and Shadab Khan as spinning all-rounders, they failed miserably. Roff had a very bad tournament. Stark, I think he had bad tournament, but I think he did well in the final. So I don't know whether he should. Mustafa Sur Rehman, I had a huge hope, and he was pretty bad in this entire tournament.
It's a pretty strong flop 11, but but yes, that's why they're flops, right? Because they have high expectations, but they've not performed to those levels.
Exactly. Yeah.
Umar, did you have any other final thoughts on this World Cup?
I thought the World Cup was really good. But I'm not sure if the same for the listeners as well. But it wasn't as exciting as, for example, 2011, 2019. Maybe because there was the Asia Cup just recently as well. And there was a World Cup just before that. But yeah, no, it was a good tournament. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think you started a new job, haven't you? So you've been busy with those things rather than being able
That's
to
right.
sit as a student and watch cricket all day.
That's true.
Yeah. Jack, what about you?
You know, it was better than I thought it was going to be. For someone whose expectations were absolutely extinguished within the first week, I've watched a serious amount of cricket and I've been really impressed with some of the quality on show. It wasn't the World Cup I expected. You know how people would say that India has this... the pitches they produce are either rank turners or flat as a pancake and the ball gets bouted to all parts. I think there's actually been a lot of games where between 250 and 300 has been a really good score, and not because the ball has been turning square, just because the pitch has been maybe a little bit slow or whatever, and we've had some really good games because of that. So I've really enjoyed that, because so many people jump in this bandwagon of one day cricket is boring now because teams bout 300 all the time. They absolutely do not. It's one day cricket is really good when 270 is the total, and there's a bit of cat and mouse between the bowlers and the batsmen as to how they're going to get there. And I've really enjoyed that. Some of the best games have been South Africa versus Australia, when they chased the last 50 runs, six down, and the tension was palpable at times. So yeah, I've enjoyed that side of things, and it not being the stereotypical World Cup which you would get in India per se.
Yeah, I agree, and I think this has been a great World Cup, and you know, congratulations to Australia. They performed when it mattered the most, and they've been a champion side throughout this tournament. But then now it's back to other forms of the game. India is playing Australia in 3 days in a T20 series, which I don't know if many people will watch. But then the big series will come after that. India will play South Africa in some tests. And then, of course, England will come over in January to India for some test matches and other games. So hopefully we'll talk to both of you again. Thank you for joining, both Jack and Umar. And Sumit, hopefully you enjoyed your first episode as the new co-host, and we'll do a few more episodes of cricket in the few coming months.